And for a number of months, we've heard progressives debate the candidates for president on the Democratic side of the political aisle. They've been talking about policy, the direction of the country that they'd like to see. And now, of course, Democrats have coalesced around Joe Biden to lead their national ticket. Republicans will, of course, have Donald Trump running for a second term. There hasn't been any mystery about that. Trump remains very popular, generally speaking, among Republicans and conservatives. And this hour, it's a chance to hear from conservatives about how they see the direction of the country, what we might learn from the pandemic, and which issues deserve the most focus as we head for November. I want to welcome our guests who are on the line with us. Don Riley is, I think you're still vice president of Mark IV. Is that correct, Don?
I got furloughed. Actually, I retired in January.
it's a permanent furlough. Well, how about this?
I don't go to the office anymore, but but I'm retired, and it's wonderful.
Well, you picked an interesting time to retire, that is for sure. A former supervisor of the town of Greece has worn many, many hats in the party locally. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here, Don.
Thank you, Evan. I have a quick question for you, though. Have you been out on the links? I know you're quite a golfer.
No, but I have not. But I will say that, you know, I'm somebody who sort of I've been reading a lot, and we had a show recently about whether to keep beaches and parks open. And I think that there's a Northeast anti-beach mentality, Don. It's like every time that in Florida or California anyone's on a beach, people share pictures up here and go, see, you can't trust them. And in the pictures I see, I think most people are actually more spread out than they get credit for. I don't think you can close beaches forever. I don't think you can close parks, and probably not golf courses and tennis courts. I mean, I understand why it's a hard call for a lot of places, but people are ready to go outside. So
I absolutely agree. And last week we drove through Shalott or Durand, and it was like a summer day. People were out walking, and they were spacing, and a lot of people wore masks or coverings. I mean, I think being outside is, and golf and the parks, I think this is when the parks should be at their best for giving people a place to go. But I think they have to be staffed a little bit to space people out and encourage them to be safe.
Yeah, I think we're going to all learn how to do that. Let me welcome also Anna Garvey, a former member of the University of Rochester Young Republicans and now a member of the Erie County Young Republican Committee. Anna, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Evan. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for making the time. And also hello to Tim Sheafin, who is a small business owner who's been with us before. Tim is down in, I want to say, Bloomfield, Tim Sheafin. Is that correct?
I live in Bloomfield, but I'm sitting in West Bloomfield. That's where I spend my days.
Okay. And how is work for you, Tim? Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing.
Well, fortunately, auto repair is an essential business. So we're working behind locked doors, speaking to people over an extension telephone, and doing the best we can to keep our business alive and service our customers in the limited capacity we're currently, you know, using.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's do this. Let me ask all three of you, and I'll start with you, Don, to kind of give
me
a sense for your view of the direction of the country, maybe pre-pandemic, and then, if you like, we'll also transition into what maybe lessons we're all learning from the pandemic. But how do you see the direction of the country currently?
Well, the economy was driving, I think, the direction of the country because it was booming, but that could be 100 years ago now, and I think the direction of the country is changed dramatically and maybe even permanently with the total shift to trying to do business in a arm's length fashion. The retooling of our industries, what's been impressive to me is 60 Minutes had a session on Ford last night. Ford Motor Company is cranking out ventilators, and so the whole tapestry has changed dramatically because of the pandemic.
How do you see the initial lessons that we're learning from this pandemic, Don?
Well, I got to tell you, I've you know, like you, I watch the news in all different facets. And Governor Cuomo, his first session, his very first one I caught, was absolutely over the moon with handling it. I think the president has not found his mark yet. I just can't imagine trying to be a leader with all these moving parts going on all at the same time, and at the same time asking Congress to spend not billions but trillions of dollars. So all bets are off. I don't think we've seen a preliminary to an election like this in our history.
Yeah.
All bets are off.
Anna Garvey, pre-pandemic, how did you see the direction of the country?
So I think it depends on what subject you're kind of looking at as far as the whole direction of the country. I mean, I agree. Most people were benefiting from a strong economy. You know, jobs are plentiful and people are working. Now, obviously, that's going to be a struggle as we look into the next year. I would say, like, my main concerns as far as the direction of the country pre-pandemic have kind of lasted, just as far as actual conservatism not really having a place on the stage when our focus is becoming more about Trumpism versus, you know, the Bernie Sanders socialism and just the growth of government. As far as the pandemic factors into that, you would hope that maybe it's a forced realignment in our priorities and more of an appreciation for how to approach and deal with each other. But I think that's sort of a rosy view on what might come out of it.
Well, give me a little bit more about that. So, I know it might be a rosy view, but give me that best case. What does there's no good outcome. No one's rooting for a pandemic, but what is a good lesson to learn going forward from your perspective?
Yeah, I think there are a few. I mean, as far as what I was just talking about and kind of being more willing to give each other the benefit of the doubt, because I think this sort of unprecedented, almost traumatic thing that we're all going through together should be, I mean, if something is going to be enough of a challenge to have push come to shove and make us try to think beyond what's dividing us, then, I mean, this is it, wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting you say that, Anna, just because in the first few weeks of the pandemic, I had this probably naive hope that,
yeah.
And I'll explain it a little bit, because obviously...
That's why I'm saying it's probably too
well,
rosy.
Well, I don't know, but when there is a national crisis, you know, you do see a desire among the public to rally if there is competent leadership. And I'll give you kind of two perspectives on that, and then I'll ask for yours. First of all, post 9/11... People forget, I mean, 9/11 was almost 20 years ago. People forget that election went to the Supreme Court, and Democrats were furious that Bush was president, not Gore. And then 9/11 happens, and Bush's approval rating 2 weeks later was 91%. 91. So this country wanted to rally during, you know, a period of sort of having a common enemy. It's sort of a thing that happens in a lot of different countries. It's not unique to this country, but it happens. And
yep.
So in the first few
it's
weeks,
human.
Yeah, exactly. So in the first few weeks of the pandemic, you know, I was in touch a lot with my parents, my aging parents, who I'm very concerned about, live in Ohio. And I was absolutely blown away with what kind of quick work their governor, Mike DeWine, has done there. I thought Governor DeWine has been outstanding, has been communicating quickly, acting quickly, and taking responsibility, even when making choices that weren't popular. And so I kind of thought, wow, look at this. You know, here's a Republican governor there, Governor Inslee in Washington, similar. There's a Democrat in Washington state. And I thought, it doesn't matter. Leadership does not matter what party you're in during a crisis. And I think people are going to rally. But then a few weeks later, here we are heading towards May, and it feels like we're right back in the same sort of political divide. And it feels sort of intractable. So I guess my early optimism might be waning a bit there. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I understand and I agree with a lot of that. And I think rather than focusing on the national unity, because I don't think that that's going to happen until this administration is out of office, not even necessarily as a criticism of the president, just as far as how deeply entrenched that division is at this point. Like, I'm not sure that we'll ever be able to get over that. But I think the way that governors have been able to deal with their states, I mean, we had obviously 2 minutes ago a praise of Governor Cuomo by someone on here as a conservative, right? That it's sort of highlighting the benefits of federalism and local government as far as being able to better address these problems and bring people together. That, you know, when it's it's sort of closer to you. Does that sort of
make sense? I think so. I mean, especially at a time where, you know, this is a country that values federalism, but especially at a time where we have not been able to get sort of a cohesive plan, national plan for testing and supplies, it does feel much more sort of either regional, you got these regional coalitions of states, or even sort of states kind of on their own. And so I do think that makes sense, especially in this current moment. And I agree that with this administration, no matter your political views, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of cohesive national movement on just about anything. And I think
it's religious at this point. You're either pro or against. And I mean, I don't think it's even like I said, it's not a criticism of anyone in particular. I think that's just the state of things. I don't think we'll be able to get over that, but I think after this, we might.
Yeah, I know Don wants to jump in, and we'll get Tim in a second. Go ahead, Don.
Sorry.
Yeah, this is Don. One of the elements missing, I think, in the leadership is humility. And if humility, George Bush, like him or not, has had a humble spirit about him. He rarely reacted to any nasty criticism of good, bad, or indifferent. That was his approach. But even Governor Cuomo lacks that sense of humility that I would hope that both he and the president would display more of. And I think that that people will respond to that. There was a humility after 9/11 of our leaders, and it wasn't a stridency. You can ask people to do a lot of things in a non-strident way, and they'll do it. We were in California when this broke out in March, and the governor there was, Governor Newsom was on, and he was displayed incredible leadership, but it was rather humbly displayed. He can have his differences politically, but where our leaders get strident, I think they lose that ability to bring people together. Now, the argument, the battle over the money for New York is clearly the federal government's on the wrong side, and clearly the governor's correct that we send a lot more to the feds than we ever get back. Monroe County sends more to the state than it ever gets back, and so on and so forth. That's part of the being the big element of the economics, but they're losing it. I mean, for the feds to screw around with helping New York right now is absolutely ridiculous and absurd.
You're still a Republican, aren't you, Don?
I was born a Republican. I'll die a Republican. I am a Republican, but I'm also an American and a pragmatist. And we're on our knees right now here in New York State. Local governments that plow roads and pick up leaves and open playgrounds and run parks are going to be on their knees unless they get a lot of assistance. And that's not asking too much. Hmm. That really isn't. This is stuff that the people, as the President Obama used to say, this is stuff the folks need. And so for McConnell and those people not to get it is ridiculous. On the other hand, Nancy Pelosi hasn't been humble.
And yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know how much you can pin on Mitch McConnell.
No. Oh, McConnell has a job to do, but telling people that states can go bankrupt is ridiculous. That's like telling a town it can go bankrupt. Well, it can, but who's going to plow the roads?
Well,
who's going to respond to fires? And who's going to respond to police service? So,
Let me bring in Tim, and I will say that to Don's point there, this is where it's hard to argue Governor Cuomo's point that you want the economy to bounce back, let big states declare bankruptcy and see what happens.
Yeah.
He's not wrong about that. He's not wrong about that.
Yeah.
Tim Schieffen, how did you see sort of the direction of the country pre-pandemic, and then what are you seeing now?
No, we were riding the wave. You know, we had a great economy, low unemployment. You know, I'm speaking for myself. I had more money in my pocket. It was a lot easier to do business. This pandemic is a brick wall. We ran head first right into it. The states weren't prepared. Our state wasn't prepared. The federal government was not prepared. You know, I'm not going to be an armchair quarterback through this, but when it's all over, there's going to be a lot of people that are armchair quarterbacks. And, you know, we're looking at poor leadership nationally. We're looking at average leadership here in the state. I'll give Cuomo an A. And you know what I've called him on your show
before. I do.
the guy has stepped up to the plate. He speaks with honesty. He's in the limelight. He's doing what he needs to do. He's doing the best he can. Now, I didn't say A+, but the guy has stood up and been a leader throughout this for our state. So I'll take my hat off. I'll eat it. He's doing what he needs to do. Now, Trump, well, you asked Don a minute ago if he was still a Republican. I'm going to tell you, for quite some time now, I've been an embarrassed Republican, and that's not just with Donald Trump putting his foot in his mouth every 5 minutes. It's on the state level. We got a bunch of pansies on the state level that say, we're not going to run again. Oh, it's too hard to get things done. Well, you know, we need leaders. We need leaders in the federal government. We need leaders in the state government. We need collaboration. And Don was absolutely right. Humility. You know, there's certain characteristics of a good leader, and humility is one of them. You know, there's nothing wrong with a leader standing up and saying, hey, look, I made a mistake, and I'm going to fix it. Or, hey, look, maybe I was in the wrong direction on this, but now I'm going to listen to my advisors. I'm going to collaborate. I'm going to work together. We need collaboration. We need bipartisanship. We need to get that spirit that we had back at 9/11, and we all need to realize we're in this together, and we need to figure out a way to make things happen. And Ford Motor Company is one of my favorite companies in the entire universe, and they stepped up to the plate. They're doing what they need to do. It's a family-owned company, and those guys are doing it right. We need more leadership like that. We need more companies like that. We need our representatives to get off of their stupid boxes, listen to what needs to be done, quit trying to sneak crap into bills that are going to cripple small businesses when this is all over, like the $15 national minimum wage we asked Joe Morelli about when he was on your program. What the heck's going on with that? That's the last thing a small business needs to deal with after a crisis like this. We need leaders that have the wherewithal to figure out what it's going to take to get manufacturing back in the United States, pay a decent wage to those that earn it, and remind what those same people what the minimum wage is all about. It's for high school kids and untrained people, not people trying to raise a family. They need to pull their heads out of the sand. They need to start working together and do what we elected them to do. And that advice can be followed by all of them.
All right. So those are some opening remarks, and we've got phone calls and emails to take as we talk about the conservative perspective on the country, the direction of the country, what we're learning from the pandemic. What Tim is talking about there, it's so interesting to see what happens out of this pandemic when it comes to manufacturing, because, you know, we're learning. We've known for a while that a lot of manufacturing has gone elsewhere for different reasons. Trade deals and all kinds of other forces impacting that Democrats and Republicans have largely been okay with for the last 40 years. But when you don't make most of the stuff that you need in a crisis, you could be in trouble. Will we actually come out of this and decide we're going to make things here again? I don't know. I think that Tim's point there is going to be fascinating to watch as we go forward. So let's take our only break of the hour, and then let's get some feedback from listeners. We've got emails, phone calls to take with Tim Sheafin, who's a small business owner, Anna Garvey, who's a member of the Erie County Young Republican Committee, Don Riley, who's worn just about every hat that we could think of in local conservative politics before his retirement this past January. Let's get that break and your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the first in a series of conversations with people from different industries about what reopening the economy might look like and how the pandemic has impacted them. Tomorrow we talk restaurants. Today we talk the arts community. We've got 8 artists joining us next hour, telling us what they've been up to, what kind of work they're able to do, what kind of customer base that might sustain them, and more. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go to Pavilion. Paul is on the phone first. Go ahead, Paul.
Good afternoon. I went to a Goldwater rally 55 years ago, stood 15 feet from him. The current thing that's called conservative is appalling. I think our embarrassment of a president should be abandoned by everybody, conservatives, liberals, whatever. And I, you know, TR was my ideal Republican. Nixon did some good things with the Endangered Species Act and opening up China. he also did some bad things. Nixon is the one that sent all the manufacturing of televisions to China. But
what does it mean to be conservative? You say this administration is not conservative, and true conservatives should reject it. What is conservative?
Well, first of all, it's honesty, and it's concern for, and it's a noblesse oblige. This thing is a rapacious guy that says, "Oh yes, I'm going to spend millions of dollars at my resorts of government money, $600 a night for a Secret Service man." It's appalling. And then the Ukraine thing, and then the dishonesty of Sharpiegate. I think he should have been impeached from Sharpiegate. That's appalling. And the dishonesty of abandoning science. I mean, it used to be that knowledge was conservative educated people were Republicans. Nowadays, educated people are Democrats, and the massive Republicans are the uneducated don't even believe in evolution, let alone climate change. And
well, that's a big generalization, Paul. But tell me a leader that stands out to you as a conservative that you would say that's the kind of leadership we need.
Well, I listened to the woman that was head of the Heritage Foundation. I can't remember her name, but okay. She was a responsible person.
Okay. How about people like Mitt Romney?
Mitt Romney as a man of courage, but all the other senators too afraid to speak their mind. It's an appalling situation.
Okay. Paul, well, I appreciate the phone call, and so let me kick it to our guests. And to Paul's point, we recently talked to Tom Nichols, a conservative author and writer and a former member of the Republican Party who has left the Republican Party. And Don Riley, on this program last week, he said too much of the modern GOP has become a cult of personality, afraid to stand up and call out bad leadership. And that's what Paul seems to be saying. Do you agree, Don?
Well, I think there's I think there's two forces pulling at each other. The one force that we see, the Mitch McConnell and that force that's fighting common sense, in this case with New York State and others that need assistance, is the establishment. That is the swamp. They're all part of the swamp. I mean, imagine this, Evan. In 1984, Barbara Cobble retired, and as a young guy with stars in his eyes, I went after the nomination. And Fred Eckert wound up getting it, and then right after that, Louise Slaughter took it for 30 years. If I had gone down there in my 30s, I would have been brought into the club, and they would have told me the rules. And if you misstep, you're sidelined and you don't get funds in the election and so on and so forth. The establishment is now fighting the wild Trump approach towards things, and everybody, the country's caught in the middle. Trump is no more conservative than my dog was a conservative. He's a pragmatist. He's an opportunist in the sense that he saw the country really tired of the lethargy. President Obama was a pleasant guy, but the country really just was drifting around for 8 years. It really hadn't taken hold. And he took advantage of that. He saw it. He made an end around over 15 other Republican candidates, but he just doesn't get it. He does not get the fact that we know he's the president, we know he's in charge, we know he deployed the resources of the federal government like you've never seen since World War II, but let somebody else say that. He literally is almost juvenile about his needing to get fawned all over. And he's doing a good job on deploying the resources, on working with the governors, on doing all the things that you'd hope a president would do. But enough. And so he's not a conservative. Conservatives stand for as little government as is necessary, not as much. And these guys are big government people. The president's big government. Oh, my God, is he ever And McConnell and Pelosi are big government people, too.
Anna Garvey, what do you make of Paul's phone call?
I have so many thoughts about all of this. I think every time I've ever been on your show, we've gotten into this talk about whether or not we think the president is conservative at all. And I've always maintained that he is not. He's a big, as Don just said, big government guy. That's a hallmark of being a true conservative, is that you want to limit government and let people be as free as possible. So that is probably has always been one of my biggest concerns of his presidency, is that this sort of Trumpism starts to overwhelm the real Republicanism and conservatism in the party. It has to make you ask whether you think the party will split eventually into some more principled conservatives, almost with like libertarian leanings, and then the more populist Trump supporters. But I think maybe I'm too lenient thinking that a lot of current Republican politicians are really just trying to do their best to keep some of the conservative values and ideas going within the constraints of the Trump presidency. It's a little hard for them to go 100% against what the president is saying when a lot of their constituency are still dedicated supporters of the president. But, I mean, they're out there. You can look at Senator Ben Sasse, Nikki Haley. I mean, you know that I was always a big Marco Rubio fan. He's become maybe less principled over the years. But, I mean, they're there. The conservatism in the country isn't gone yet, but it's going to be an effort to keep those kind of values going in the coming political future of the country, I think.
Okay. Tim Sheehan.
Kudos to Don. He's got it right on Trump. And just to add to conservative, in my mind, a conservative is somebody that, doesn't want too much government, but also would have been better prepared for a circumstance like we're currently immersed in. Maybe set aside some money, maybe have some reserves. Maybe our strategic stockpiles should be reviewed more regularly and built up to an amount that's going to really benefit us when the crap hits the fan. I don't think there's too many Democrats or Republicans that fit into that outline these days. As far as the intelligence level of the parties, Democrat or Republican, we've got an overwhelming amount of stupid people out there in the world. Let's just say it that way. Ignorant, stupid, uneducated, tuned into their own ideas, not the constituents' ideas. They got to get back to collaboration. They got to get back to having the fingers on the pulse of their constituents. And I think that's universal.
Let me work through more feedback before I get back to your phone calls. An email from Chaz, who says, "For your panel, Evan, although much of New York is a conservative state, we are constantly dragged to the left by downstaters who insist on forcing their desires and views on the rest of a very different state. We see this in gun control policy, restrictions on business, even the extent of the lockdown we're all currently living under. Although there exists support for splitting the state or keeping it whole but dividing it into two regions, such plans would be an uphill battle at best. So what can conservatives do to make New York more reflective of their values and desires in spite of the influence of downstate?" I'll start with Tim on this and work back through the panel. What do you think, Tim?
He's got it right on the money there. You look at the map where the red and the blue comes, you're seeing that blue spot at the center of every metropolis in our state, Buffalo, Rochester, Albany, downstate. I don't know that's ever going to be corrected. I've been told that a Republican vote in New York is wasted on the national level because of the Democrats that are all populating those urban areas. Education, that's probably the only thing. You know, get the word out, get people thinking for themselves. And that's my advice to anybody. When you size up a candidate, don't just listen to what they have to say. Follow up. Check them out. See what they're doing. See what their history is. See what their track record is. You need to learn as much about the person you're going to vote to as you possibly can.
Okay. Anna?
Yeah, I think that's all really good advice. It's funny. We talk about this quite often, that we think that the top portion of New York could secede, become New Amsterdam, or I don't know. There's a lot to be said for that, because New York is such an overwhelming force and has so much power over the state government that it just kind of makes it a little bit frustrating to be politically involved when you feel like it's an uphill battle. But so many things that actually matter to communities are local. So I think it's really just a matter of being as involved as you can within the community that you can reach.
I think that's really good advice. I mean, sometimes I think we, Don Riley, maybe the media is guilty of this too. We focus on the big national races, but so much of the work of governing and so much of the importance of competent governing is pretty local.
Well, about splitting the state up, I think that's silly. Look, at the same argument, the same argument can be, why would you want to be detached from the greatest city in the world? And I know it brings a lot of issues and problems with it, but our strength as a state is so much greater because we are New York State. And this is silly. It's sort of, I think it's ineffective local state legislators who go down there and don't, their arguments don't win the day. And so they're constantly coming back saying, oh, all the problems are because the people downstate control things. Well, that means we're not making our arguments well enough, and we're not getting enough of our constituents to actually vote. Al D'Amato won 3 times in statewide elections. We had attorney generals win. We had comptrollers win not too many years ago. I think the Republican Party in the state has been poorly led, not currently, but poorly led, and we sort of use it as an excuse, well, I can't really do anything, I'm in the minority, and all those guys in Manhattan control things. That's baloney. Separating ourselves from New York City, one of the greatest cities in the whole world, is silly at best. It brings great strength to our community. We just have to run better candidates, stronger candidates, smarter candidates, conservative candidates who can carry the day and carry their arguments.
It's interesting. Don, you're arguing that even though Republicans are a minority party in, for example, state assembly, you think a member of the GOP state assembly from Western New York could make a dent if that they were an effective leader?
If they had an issue that was critical to the entire state, whether I had a friend who was a predecessor of mine as town supervisor, Fred Eckert, who single-handedly caused pension reform to take place in this state. There wasn't a vote for it in either in the Assembly or the Senate. He went by bus, by car, by train, by plane, all over the state, embarrassed a lot of the legislators by raising the point and showing the devastation we would have had without pension reform. And he single-handedly made it happen. That's what our minority legislators can do. Instead of crying the blues, I can't get my bill out of committee, I can't do this, bring an issue and get on the road and sell it to the voters and rally the voters. We complain about the SAFE Act, but the very people complaining about it don't even vote. They march around, they go down there and they have their banners. But I guarantee you that if the SAFE Act devotees or the anti-SAFE Act people had voted, that they could have turned some statewide elections, but they don't vote.
Let me get back to your phone calls. This is Keith next. Go ahead, Keith.
I have an interesting show. I got 3 things I just want to mention.
Only 3?
Only 3 short things.
Okay.
I hope you can hear me out. I had to grab my head so it didn't explode when Don Riley excoriated Morelli, and I am not a fan of Joe Morelli at all. I think he did an abysmal job when he was in charge of the insurance committee or whatever it was, stated that Morelli wants a $15 minimum wage, and 2 sentences, and of course Don was against it, and then 2 sentences later he says he wants people to have a decent wage. I don't even want to go any further than his contradiction there. But you talk about conservatism. Conservatism based in Europe was fiscal responsibility. In this country, conservatism is God, guns, and gays. And I can prove that conservatism in this country is not like it is in Europe. We had record employment last year. What was employment? Unemployment rate, less than 3%. But we had a $1.1 trillion deficit. So if you cannot get money to offset a deficit with record employment, When are you ever going to get it?
Well, hold on, though, Keith.
Now,
the unemployment rate is a phony baloney stat that the Obama administration cooked up, as well as the Bush administration, as well as the Trump. If you're not doing workforce participation rate, then you're not really looking at who's working. And nobody, Republicans and Democrats, like to do that because there's a lot of people who've given up on finding jobs, and then they don't show up in the stats. So, and this happened under Obama, too, by the way. But go ahead.
All right. But all that being said, we had the best. Let's say the best time for finding a job was last year.
Okay.
Will we agree to that?
I mean, I think plenty of people found jobs last year. Yes, go ahead.
Right. All right. But we still ran a $1.1 trillion deficit, and we had a Republican president and a Republican Congress for 2 years. Nothing is going to change because we're trying to borrow our way out of debt, and it's impossible. Now, is the Treasury just printing money now?
Yeah, they are.
Are they selling bonds?
Sure. And Keith, you know that Republicans care about deficits when Democrats are in office, right? That's when they care about deficits.
You're right. The hypocrisy on both sides is awful. But you just can't assume, you know, Republicans are conservative because, by definition, they're not. And the deficits show it.
Okay.
But they are guns, gods, and gays.
All right. Let's try to move as fast as we can. Don Reilly, fair to say that the Republican record on the national level has been concerned about deficits when Democrats are in power, less concerned than when Republicans are in power?
Well, they say they're concerned about deficits, as do the Democrats. You can't say you're not concerned about a deficit, but every senator and every member of the House comes to Washington with their needs from their district, and they try to insert them. Every lobbyist tries to insert their needs, and that keeps bloating the budget. Rebuilding the military is billions. Rebuilding our infrastructure is billions. It's got to come from someplace. The president's tax reform, income tax reform, though, really may very well have for the first time driven the economy, or at least spark it, but that's all blown away now, and so it remains to be seen what happens. By the way, your caller, I didn't say anything about Joe Morelli at all.
I think Tim Schieffen did. Tim, you're the one who mentioned. Yeah, so Tim, let me bring you back in. You mentioned the minimum wage. Anything you want to add there?
Well, I just wanted to point out that the timing of that $15 national minimum wage with the CARES Act was just asinine. I mean, that makes zero sense. And the education needs to be provided to those that favor this high minimum wage, that the minimum wage is a minimum wage. Otherwise, it would have been called a living wage. They're different. They're completely different. Kolb, our assemblyman, could see that, but apparently none of the Republican majority Senate that passed it could see that. That's why I say I'm embarrassed to be in a Republican in New York State.
So as we get ready in our last few minutes to wrap the program, and I'll ask Anna to start here. Move away from who's in the White House and just look forward and tell me what you would say when you meet up with friends who are progressive and they say, look, what this pandemic says is employment, insurance tied to employment is a disaster. People are losing their jobs through no fault of their own. We need single payer. People will say, yes, we need higher wages, including higher minimum wages, and Tim Schieffen has a stroke. And we think about all of the arguments progressives are making. What's the conservative argument for moving forward through this pandemic, the principles that you think ought to carry it? Anna.
Oh, my gosh, Evan, there's a lot there. I don't think any of that there's a simple answer to any of it. I mean, as much as we like to use situations like this to say, oh, yes, obviously now everybody should be making this much money because they were essential during the pandemic. And, you know, maybe there's something to discuss there and say that there should be some kind of bonus or hazard pay or whatever. But I don't think you can make any sweeping statements about, you know, healthcare policy or anything just based on our experience here. Maybe we're learning things. As far as having it tied to having insurance tied to your employment, I mean, there are pros and cons to everything. Obviously, we learned something that if you lose your job, lose your health insurance, like, you know, what happens to those people? I don't think that that necessarily translates directly into full-on single payer when there are so many other issues that go into having single payer healthcare. And if you're someone who's been frustrated with how the government has handled things in the past couple months, and then your next thought is to say that, yes, you also want them to have full control over your healthcare, to me, that is cognitively dissonant. But that's my take.
All right. And Don Reilly, if you can do it in 30 seconds, do it.
The book has been rewritten. The pandemic has changed government's approach towards everything. My progressive friends will say, see, the government can do it if they really have to, and they did it, and they're paying all the bills, and there's absolutely, you know, fairness across the land. But we really can't. We're going to have to rewrite the book, literally, on health insurance and government after this pandemic is over with. It'll change dramatically.
I don't think anybody would argue in favor that there's real fairness happening yet here. But Tim Sheafin, 30 seconds, final thoughts. Go ahead.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. The assembly had single payers lined up to go through. We should have acted on it before. The governor should have had a balanced budget the last two rounds. Then we wouldn't be in the hole so bad. And the moral of the story, all of us New Yorkers are going to pay for all of this. And yeah, we got to get our crap together and be more prepared the next time.
I want to thank all of you for hanging in there, starting just a little late with the governor's daily briefing, but thank you very much. Tim Sheafin, as a small business owner, I will say this to you and all small business owners. I mean, everybody's in a slightly different boat, but we're thinking about you, and we hope that you're hanging in there, and thanks for making time for the program.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for having me, and thank you for your support.
You got it. That's Tim Sheafin, Anna Garvey, who is a member of the Erie County Young Republican Committee. I always appreciate the conversation. Anna, thanks for making time.
Thanks for asking me on, Evan. It was fun.
You got it. And Don Reilly, who is enjoying retirement. Happy retirement, Don.
Evan, thank you. I'll be listening.
Always nice to have you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank
Short
you,
break.
Evan.
More connections coming up.